Welcome to Real Talk, Real Estate Discussions with Andrew Kirsch. In each episode, Andrew interviews industry leaders. We'll hear their real-time opinions on today's market, their background and unique career highlights, and guidance for newcomers into the industry. You can find this show at scholarkirsch.com and on YouTube, LinkedIn, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and more. Now here's the host of Real Talk, Andrew Kirsch.
Episode 24 of Real Talk. Last week was what I call the Super Bowl of real estate events in Los Angeles, the Jewish Federation real estate cabinet dinner honoring Bob Hart, CEO and founder of True America, good friend and client. A few episodes ago, we had Noah Hochman, who's the chief investment officer or co-chief investment officer of True America. The JFED event, always the highlight of the year in the real estate industry. 1,300 or 1,400 people packing the Beverly Hilton. You can't get that many real estate folks from the appetizer portion of the event to the main program because everyone's schmoozing. Regardless if it's an up market, down market, it's well attended. And the sentiment was, as you would think, you know, people are not overly busy, so they have more time to network and go to business development activities and charity events like the Jewish Federation Real Estate Cabinet Dinner. But people are talking about how, you know, slowly things are picking up. There are more transactions. We're seeing it. We're seeing, you know, we just closed a preferred equity deal this week. And there are many other deals that are right behind it that are slated to close. So last episode, I thought perhaps it was just coincidence, but now we're seeing, you know, deal flow start ramping back up. This week's episode, we've got Doug Lozier, the Chief Investment Officer of Gene Suites. We haven't spoken a lot about life science, and Doug's company builds GMP manufacturing facilities, lab space. They fund the project costs for many laboratory and pharmaceutical companies in the biotech industry. They're backed by Apollo, just a really interesting company. One of their first transactions is a large 300,000 square foot facility in the Raleigh-Durham area. Even if you're not in the biotech life science space, I think you'll find this conversation fascinating as to how specialized of an asset class. I even credited Doug as to basically having a PhD in science compared to my colleagues and friends and clients who repair toilets and kitchens and hardwood floors for a living. Anyway, hope you enjoy my conversation with Doug Lozier.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Real Talk. In this episode, I've got my friend and client, Doug Lozier, the Chief Investment Officer of Gene Suites. Doug, how you doing?
Very good, Andrew. Thanks for the time today, and thanks for inviting me on the podcast.
Sure, absolutely. Well, it looks like you've got a nice sunny background behind you. Where are you right now?
I'm in San Diego.
Oh, perfect. Well, I'm not sure if you're a Padres fan, but Dodgers-Padres, big weekend series between the two teams. You took down you took us down last year in the playoffs. I'm still hurting. I'm wearing Dodger blue today. Hopefully we'll get some revenge, but it's only the regular season. Only game like 33 or something.
It'll be a great weekend for sure.
Yeah. So tell my audience, to the extent they don't know, what is Gene Suites?
Yeah. So I started my career in life science back in around the mid 90s doing brokerage with CBRE. I spent a small stint at Savills Studley doing mostly corporate real estate advisory work in the life sciences sector. And also landlord work, agency side work, kind of cut my teeth on, you know, on the investment side, sourcing life science projects to the likes of Phase 3 Properties, Alexandria Real Estate, Biomed Real Estate, kind of helped Alan Gold prop up his original REIT when he formed BMR in the 2000s. and have been involved in life science real estate since then. As a result of those efforts, I kind of identified a niche that was unmet in my opinion, and still is unmet, in that being GMP manufacturing. So if you think about life science and the life science continuum, you know, you've got this, you know, all of this work that takes place in the lab at the R&D level, you know, venture capital, 6 to 8 years to develop a therapy, whether that's gene or cell therapy or any other modality. But when they get to the point of having to manufacture these compounds or these therapies, it becomes quite capital intensive. And there aren't a lot of options for companies to affect that. And that's actually at the point in time in the continuum of life science when they actually become revenue positive, right? They're not burning cash. They're actually at a point where they can sell a drug. And but those, you know, these GMP facilities are extremely expensive to build. They're capital intensive. They take a lot of time from a regulatory perspective. And so we assembled a team of people that come not only from real estate, but from industry. So our chief technical officer comes from Genentech. He spent 20 years at Genentech in large pharma, and then with National Resilience after that, a CDMO. And right now, companies that are looking to manufacture product have really two options. And those two options are a buy build, which is where they fund all of those infrastructure costs. And those can amount to, you know, anywhere between $1,000 and $1,200 a square foot to build out. When you compare that with a laboratory space, which is $250 or $300 a square foot in tenant improvements, you know, it's a vast sort of capital endeavor. And the technical expertise that comes along with that is immense, right? The second option they have is to go to a CDMO, which is a, you know, contract development manufacturing organization. You might know names such as Catalent or Lonza or Fujifilm Diosynth Biotechnologies, by example. And those are the CDMOs that are kind of taking up the slack for those that don't have the capital to necessarily do it themselves. GeneSuites was formed to provide a third option, which sort of feathers into the capital efficiencies, meaning we'll fund, you know, call it half of the project costs, right, for a company, which frees up an enormous amount of capital for them for core business functions such as R&D and other areas that might be more accretive to their business, but then provides the infrastructure available for them to manufacture. And so we went out 2 years ago and started a capital raise. Our first capital partner that we landed was Apollo Global Management. And our first project that we have currently is in Raleigh, Durham, and it's 300,000 square feet of GMP manufacturing. We have two distinct offerings.
Doug, before you get into that, you've used the term GMP multiple times. What is GMP?
Yeah, so that's good manufacturing practices or good manufacturing principles. So those are, it's basically like an ISO, right? An ISO designation. So it's what the FDA requires when a company is manufacturing anything that goes into human beings. And so it's okay. Not just the sticks and bricks, but it's all of the regulatory aspects that come along with that. Yeah.
Got it. All right. So you were talking about your first project in North Carolina when I interrupted you. So can,
oh yeah, no, yeah, no problem. So we bought a project in North Carolina on a forward commit from a developer that built it. We closed escrow in December and we're implementing our plan. And we actually have two offerings. The first one is a high performance shell, which basically what we'll do is we'll order all of the high level MEP infrastructure that's required for these facilities, mechanical, electrical, plumbing. We'll fit them up. Those are long lead items, especially with what's happening in supply chain right now across, you know, the world. It puts a company, you know, 12 to 18 months ahead in terms of the manufacturing effort. And then we'll also offer a suite solution where we'll build out a spec cell or gene therapy manufacturing facility with a capital investment, you know, anywhere between $800 and $1,200 a square foot. It gives the company a third option, right? It's, you know, they can either use their own capital, right? Or they can, you know, as I mentioned, engage a CDMO. With a CDMO, there are challenges. You know, you lose control, you have IP concerns oftentimes, and companies are, you know, very sensitive to those issues and really like to have control. We believe we have an option that kind of sort of meets the middle point, right? Within that kind of buy build, massive capital investment versus a CDMO where they kind of lose some control, wait in line. I mean, look, if Pfizer comes along and says there's another COVID vaccine that needs to be developed, you know, those facilities could be, you know, basically pulled out from underneath a therapeutics company, and they're sitting there waiting to manufacture their product and don't have options. So
for this 300,000 square foot facility, are you intending to chop it up so that it'll be multi-tenant, or will one tenant take the whole thing?
Either or. So we've had pretty decent activity, frankly, even in light of the fact that the capital markets are in a bit of turmoil right now and companies are struggling with raising follow-on funding. But we've had a combination of interest from both. One of our buildings, we've got several tenants that are looking at, you know, between 40 and 50,000 square feet of each building. And then we've got two or three different proposals out to full campus users.
Got it. And so when you closed, so you now own this facility, this campus with Apollo?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And so how were you able to close without any tenants in tow? Did you buy it all cash, or did you get debt financing?
Yeah, Apollo closed all equity. That's a great question. And fortunately, with, you know, their balance sheet and the wherewithal that Apollo has, and, you know, they're not dissimilar to, say, a Blackstone or others, they were able to close all equity. Fortunately, their basis is pretty low on the project. They're involved in a recap right now of equity on the project as well to assemble some additional capital for the improvements that might be needed for the tenants that we're speaking with.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
And we did go out to the debt markets, FYI, late last year. And as we all know, that's been a challenging environment. You know, some of the term sheets that we received were just egregious. And, you know, Apollo made the decision. Again, we're the operator. We're the development manager. They own it. Generally own it. And they decided to just do it all equity.
Just curious, just generally speaking, what type of interest rate, and other terms were lenders, quoting you at the end of last year?
Yeah. So the latest, term sheets that we received were 650 basis points over SOFR. So, you know, you're looking at, you know, a 9.25 to a 9.5 interest rate on, you know, real estate that just those, you know, those numbers are obviously aggressive, right? And so they made the decision to do it all equity. Yeah.
Sure. So what is the plan then to buy more of these campuses with Apollo where you have a programmatic relationship? Or as you identify other projects throughout the United States, are you speaking with other capital, potential capital providers?
That's a great question, Andrew. In fact, we have a non-exclusive relationship with Apollo, although it's a very, very strong relationship on Catalyst, our project in Raleigh. But we are, Eastdil Secured has got us out right now for a programmatic capital raise. We're looking to raise between $500 million and $1 billion to scale the same program that we have at Catalyst, which is, again, the two offerings being a high-performance shell, you know, a very warm, high-performance shell that a tenant could come in and start improvements immediately, or the suite solution. So that's where we are right now in a capital raise environment.
On this one in North Carolina that you bought it from a developer, And it sounds like you will also have to do some tenant improvement work based on whatever lease arrangement you guys structure. Is that the type of deal that you're looking for going forward, where developers have built out, you know, maybe the outer shell, and then you buy it from them, or would you do completely ground up?
Both. Yeah. So our business plan involves both development from a ground up perspective in selected markets. And to be clear, the markets that we're focused on are the obvious sort of life science core markets, being, you know, Boston, San Francisco, San Diego, Seattle to some extent, Raleigh. We're even looking into Houston right now and some areas of Denver, Boulder, which seem to have a pretty active sort of backstop of GMP demand.
Yeah. And so when you discussed with Apollo this site in North Carolina, of 300,000 completely spec, you know, no tenants in tow, what was your expectation of when you thought you would get fully leased up?
Yeah, our lease up program is, we've got a 24-month sort of pro forma on that, right? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, we've got some pretty, again, we've got some pretty, fortunately, some pretty patient capital with Apollo, especially in light of this recap that they're involved with on the equity side. So we've probably got 2 to 4 years of runway on that project. But given tenant demand right now and what we're seeing, you know, life science companies that are at that point of being able to manufacture drugs that have FDA approval, that are coming out of the clinic and are you know, sort of pre-revenue, there's a huge demand for the GMP manufacturing space, because manufacturing supply capacity is at, you know, all-time lows. CDMOs are basically full, because if you think about it, a lot of the therapeutics companies are camping out at a CDMO right now. So think about it, right? If you've got work to do whether it's early stage process development of your compound or clinical stage manufacturing, harvesting more material for clinical trials per se, or your pre-commercial, you are probably engaged in a CDMO for now, thinking about your long-term manufacturing strategy when the market improves.
Mm-hmm. And what do you guys, what are the cap rates once you stabilize? And I know, you know, cap rates will fluctuate depending on the market, the location, and the market itself. And cap rates have increased over the last 12 months, really across all asset classes. What do you project an exit cap rate, I guess?
Yeah, so it depends, right, on the modality. And when I say modality, to explain that, that means exactly what they're making. So is it a cell therapy product? Is it a gene therapy product? Is it traditional API, being a, you know, active pharmaceutical ingredient, like an acetaminophen, by example, right? Is it a monoclonal antibody? Is it a biologics? Is it so it's across the board, but generally speaking, cap rates are going to be 200 to 300 basis points higher on a GMP facility exit than it would be on a traditional laboratory facility, just because investors sort of have this inherent sort of risk thought process in the facilities. But we argue that because we have a great design team in IPS and CRB, and our contractors, is DPR, that we've generated a program that has a very high residual value, right? Especially the high performance shell. If one tenant were to go out, another tenant could come in and utilize those improvements with a very little capital investment on the back end. And I think the thesis has been proven out on that by those that were rewarded handsomely for building out spec biology lab over the last 4 or 5 years. If you think about, you know, the phase three properties of the worlds, or the BMRs, the AREs, you know, think about it, they bought into the fact that built out spec generic, quote unquote, laboratory space leases, shell space sits. And that's our thesis that we're employing when it comes to GMP manufacturing and infrastructure.
Yeah. You know, I recently read, and I may get this wrong, so you'll obviously correct me because this is your subspecialty, and we do, obviously, we work with you, and we work with other life science groups, Noble Spaces and Hatch and Phase 3 and others. But I read that, you know, Alexandria, I feel like they've stopped development on quite a few of their projects. I don't know if you read about it, and I'm just curious of what your opinion on that specific announcement and just the market in general for this asset class. And I know there are so many. It's almost like multifamily. You can't just say multifamily. There's traditional multifamily. There's affordable housing. There's student housing. There's senior housing. There's assisted living, and it's the same thing with life science. So I know there's several subcategories just in this conversation. So I guess talk about that Alexandria announcement and your thoughts on the market in general.
Yeah. So you think about laboratory space as a feeder to GMP, right? That's the best way to describe it. Okay.
Right.
Again, going back to the life science continuum, when Alexandria announced that, the announcement actually was that they were halting any projects that weren't currently under development and putting a pause button on anything that wasn't either entitled or, you know, coming out of the ground at the time. I think they were, you know, seeing sort of the same headwinds that others were seeing in the market at the time. There was a lack of venture capital coming into the market. I mean, if you look at the biotech index, just from an equities perspective, you know, you've got valuations that have dropped, you know, 30-50% in that time period. And, you know, that's the lifeblood and the engine of an Alexandria tenant, right? A venture backed laboratory user. So, you know, probably a very smart decision to hit the pause button for a little while on new development. But they're very well positioned, as are others, to quickly assemble, their development teams, going forward once sort of the equity markets recalibrate, once venture capital comes back into life science. And I would say on that point, historically, at least I've seen three cycles in my career, the life science sector typically enters the downturn first and comes out first. So you'll start to see, I think we're probably, you know, people don't realize it, but we're probably 18 months into that now, maybe a little bit longer in terms of that downtrend of demand. I mean, I can give you some metrics. San Diego, by example, 2 years ago, the floating tenant demand that's tracked by the CBREs and the JLLs and the CNWs and others was on average 2 million square feet of active floating demand at any given time. Currently in the San Diego market, laboratory space demand is averaging around 600,000 to 800,000 square feet. So there's a, you know, dramatic decline in laboratory demand. Not only has demand declined in the sector overall, but the size of the users has declined as well. Small users, shorter term leases, but again, those that have built out lab space, like the Phase 3s of the world, the AREs of the world, and the BMRs, are being rewarded because they can accommodate those tenants quickly.
Got it. And so what, like, just look at the San Diego market specifically. What is vacancy rate for, I don't know if I could say life science in general, or if I need to be more specific into different subcategories?
Yeah, life science. So interestingly, you know, two years ago, vacancy rates were somewhere in the 2-3% range for existing built out lab space. That's probably gone up to 5-7% now. What we haven't seen is a tremendous amount of large blocks of sublease space come on the market, which is encouraging. Unlike the tech sector, right, where you're seeing just, you know, immense amounts of office space being put back on the market on a sublease basis, we're not seeing that. We've also seen a pause in the conversion side of laboratory life science. Whereas again, 2 years ago, I won't mention names, but there were many investment groups that came in and thought that any Class B office space could instantly be converted to laboratory space, right?
Right.
and they're learning a tough lesson pretty quickly that there's always a flight to quality in a down market. And I think that's why the blue chip, life science investment groups and developers are doing just fine right now.
Yeah, I feel like the reuse, the adaptive reuse conversion of office is the one of the hottest topics throughout real estate of what do we do with these, whether it's mid-rise, campus type, or large, skyscrapers in downtown LA, downtown San Francisco. Everyone's talking about converting into residential, but it's so costly that it even if you're buying it at such a low basis, the conversion pricing is doesn't pencil unless the floor plate is small enough. And so I can only imagine to convert to a life science lab or a GMP is equally, maybe even more cost prohibitive.
Oh, well, and it all comes back to MEP, right? I mean, the mechanical, electrical, and plumbing systems that are required for laboratory and GMP are highly robust. And they're costly, right? And not every building can support that. I mean, everything from floor loading to, slab to slab clear heights to areas to house, critical equipment like DI water systems, backup generators, RO systems, house vac, all the things that are the kind of the back of house systems that drive the engine of a laboratory or a GMP environment, just don't fit sometimes in certain buildings. And I think there are a lot of investors that are learning that lesson right now.
Yeah, absolutely. So just curious, Doug, how did you get into this asset class in the first place?
Well, so I was, as I mentioned, most of my work was corporate real estate advisory when I was with CBRE and with Studley Savills. And I represented, laboratory tenants and manufacturing tenants. And the issue that we always ran into with our client base was they were ready to manufacture, but there was no product available. Okay. And so again, going back to kind of our thesis, our investment thesis, which is, let's be the one to develop, spec or semi-spec turnkey manufacturing, GMP manufacturing facilities for companies that are ready to manufacture and provide that speed to market advantage and that capital efficiency advantage. And I had a tenant specifically, anecdotally, AveXis. AveXis is a company that developed the drug for spinal muscular atrophy. It's a gene therapy. It's not a drug, it's a cure. And so if you're a child that has the gene marker for spinal muscular atrophy, if you can catch it before it manifests, the AveXis therapy is a cure, okay? The drug, quote-unquote, therapy is priced at $2.2 million, okay? But the actuaries in the insurance side of things and the payer side of things showed that a kid would live, if not treated, 8 to 10 years, which would cost an insurance company $12 to $15 million, right? Versus a $2.2 million therapy. And I started thinking to myself, gosh, these are the types of companies that are on the forefront of scientific discovery. They're helping people, they're curing people, they're saving lives. But they have, they don't have a conduit in which to deliver quality GMP manufacturing space in a timely manner. And so that was my first client. They ended up getting bought by Novartis for $8.2 billion, by the way. So it was a great success story, but that was kind of for us anyway, that was kind of one of the first sort of anecdotal examples of a company as to, that needed what we thought we could deliver and provide but had no options other than a CDMO, right? Or buy, build themselves. So that's how we get, that's basically how I developed the business plan with my partner, Steve Scott.
Yeah. Well, in just hearing you speak and in all of our conversations that we've had, you know, you're much different than my typical client. Not to say that they're not smart. They're all smart, but not only are you smart in real estate, like my other clients, but you have to have, it sounds like you have a PhD in pharmaceuticals, medicine. And, you know, this is a lot different than, you know, repairing toilets and sprucing up a kitchen and some hardwood floors for apartments. I mean, this is as intricate, as sophisticated, as complicated. I mean, just the vocabulary that you're using, it is a different level than turning apartments.
It is. And I can't take much credit for that because I'm just a dumb real estate person.
No, frankly. Not after hearing all of this. I mean, it is completely different than.
I appreciate that, Andrew. But I must say, you know, we hiring Gary Schoenhaus, who is our chief technical officer, having the fact that he comes from large pharma and understands the technical elements of these facilities and understands succinctly the different modalities associated with manufacturing, whether it's cell therapy, gene therapy, API, you know, whatever it is, he understands the differences in terms of the infrastructure that's required to build out, you know, a facility for a particular type of user. So where we find ourselves, at least in the space of GMP, you know, real estate development and investment, is our differences is we have a very, very smart person on our team that understands the science side. I just parrot it, but he actually understands it.
Yeah. Well, even to parrot it takes a lot to just get up to speed and be able to speak with brokers, tenants, investors, lenders, podcast hosts in a very articulate way. You know, I guess in our remaining time here, and I want to be sensitive of your time, I'm comparing life science to the other asset classes because as a general real estate attorney, we work in all asset classes, and I see the number of equity providers and investors, whether it's institutional, private equity, family office, high net worths, that yeah. are interested in multifamily, right? It's thousands, if not tens of thousands, when you go from high net worth all the way to institution. And then that pyramid or that funnel gets a little more narrow when you're doing industrial, and then it gets more narrow. Maybe it's retail. Now no one wants to do office. What is, like, when you've done a programmatic or hoping to do programmatic with Apollo, but you have a good relationship with them. Can you give my audience a sense of how many institutional equity providers are out there that are interested and willing to provide capital to this space?
Yeah, I can. And we've spent the vast majority of the last 3 or 4 months in, you know, arguably one of the most challenging capital markets in the last 10 years. And we're talking to, you know, all of the brands that you might know. Probably wouldn't be prudent for me to mention them, but you can probably figure out who they are. The reception has been enormous. I mean, they get it. I mean, we've taken a bit of a different approach in terms of how we analyze demand within the space. So we've hired probably some of the best consultants in on the planet to articulate and bifurcate the FDA approval process. Okay. We've dug in substantially on, you know, INDs, which are initial new drug applications that are filed with the FDA. And we've broken those down by modality. And we've looked back, you know, call it 10, 15 years on how approvals have occurred and where they've occurred. And we've equated that to a square footage number of demand that we have forecasted for the next, call it 5 to 7 years. Okay. So we're not just working from, say, hey, build it, they will come, sort of, thesis or hypothesis. We have very, very comprehensive data that shows that if these approvals occur, okay, and the FDA signs off on this, these cell and gene therapies, we're going to experience, anywhere between 20 and 30 million square feet of GMP demand over the next, call it 7 to 10 years. And most of it's going to be in cell and gene therapy because that's where the breakthrough therapies are coming from. And so we've got metrics that we can tie to when we're talking to private equity and we're talking to these investment firms and show them data that's not just, hey, here's the existing supply in Boston, here's the current tenant demand in Boston, and here are the lease comps in Boston. We take a much different approach. It's that, of course, that's important, right? That's important data. But the data that they want to understand is the forecasting data. And fortunately, the folks that we're speaking with have investment banks that are also sector related, right? They're very smart in these sectors. They do investments in these sectors, not on the real estate side necessarily, but within, at the company level. So we've been able to comport sort of that, we would call it kind of our IP data with, tying that to real estate data, both historically and what we think is going to happen in the future. And we've got a really good story and it's being very well received.
Got it. No, it's, I can imagine that, being in a sub asset class, in life science, that, all the players, both on the equity side and the operators, it's a more concentrated group. Final question here, Doug, before I let you go, you mentioned, essentially the main four markets of San Diego, Bay Area, Boston, and North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any other markets that you're seeing as an emerging growth market for life science?
Yeah. So there are, okay. So for GMP manufacturing, it's really, just like life science in general, it's about talent, right? The folks that work in these GMP facilities typically have a community college certificate in GMP manufacturing, right? It's work. It's hard work. And there's markets across the country like Columbus, Ohio. Houston is one, by example. The Denver market seems to be emerging. Philadelphia always has been strong in drug manufacturing. But those are markets that we're seeing have not only a low cost of land, a low cost of, sort of real estate in general, building shell costs, et cetera. And specifically, we're seeing CDMOs, which, by the way, are also clients of ours. I didn't mention this, but our high-performance shell offering is very, very appealing to the CDMO sector. So we're able to capture not only the therapeutic side, but the CDMO side of things as well. I would say those are kind of three markets that come to mind outside of the core life science market, because it's getting very expensive to operate in, Boston, San Francisco, San Diego, for a box that you're going to build a box inside of for GMP manufacturing, right?
Yeah, no, I can imagine. Well, I know that I've learned a lot, even though we've worked together for a couple of years now. And I'm sure my audience has learned a lot about this asset class, and not just of life science, but of GMP manufacturing. And I'm sure if anyone has a question or wants to do this type of development, they're going to reach out to you after this podcast, or at least that's my hope.
I appreciate it. I'll leave you with one last analogy.
Yeah.
We think of GMP manufacturing as, although some would say it's very specialized, but it is very generic within the industry and does have a high residual value if it's designed and built correctly. And the evidence of that, I will give you two examples of different asset classes, but are very similar and that are both capital intensive and extremely valuable. One is data center, the other is cold storage. So those are two asset classes that mirror GMP in many different ways. So,
yeah, both are asset classes that are extremely prevalent. A lot of our clients are talking about it and have transacted in both data center and cold storage and talking about you know, converting other uses of real estate, converting, you know, old shopping centers, indoor shopping centers into data centers, or large office buildings into data centers. That's definitely been a common theme. Doug, I can't thank you enough for coming on. Good luck with the North Carolina project and your other projects in the future. And hopefully the Dodgers kick the Padres' ass this weekend, but more importantly, that they beat them in the playoffs. It doesn't matter, because last year I think we beat them like 16 or 17 times in the regular season.
Yep.
Doesn't matter when you get beat 3 out of 4 in the playoffs.
That's absolutely right. Well, good luck to your Dodgers, but I hate them.
That's okay. Friendly rivalry between you and me, Doug. And thanks again for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Andrew, for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Real Talk, Real Estate Discussions with Andrew Kirsch. You can catch prior episodes at scholarkirsch.com and on YouTube, LinkedIn, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and more. Thank you for your positive reviews, comments, and for sharing the show with others.